Now, subduing my heart's specious cowardice, I left the shady nook where I had stood, and hailed him. Slowly from his resting place he rose, and with a lean and wasted arm, in measured gesture lifted to his head, returned my salutation, then resumed his station as before. And when, ere long, I asked his history, he in reply was neither slow nor eager, but unmoved, and with a quiet, uncomplaining voice, a stately air of mild indifference, he told in simple words a soldier's tale.
The young Wordsworth brings this impressive and half-ghostly soldier, recently discharged from the army, to some comfort, and feels, finally, not fear, but human connection with one he calls a comrade.
Assured that now my comrade would repose in comfort, I entreated that henceforth he would not linger in the public ways, but ask for timely furtherance and help such as his state required. At this reproof, with the same ghastly mildness in his look, he said, "My trust is in the God of heaven, and in the eye of him that passes me."
Recorded in Dove Cottage, Grasmere, where it was written back in 1805, part 3 of The Prelude by William Wordsworth, read by Sir Ian McKellen and produced by Susan Roberts. And the poem continues tomorrow at 2:45.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
3 o'clock, Wes Butters, good afternoon. Thank you for listening. And next, drama, a classic Parisian tale full of lust, murder and madness. Plenty coming after that on 4 Extra with Mel and Wednesday's 4 o'clock show, including the Cloud Appreciation Society. And Miriam Margolyes reads another chapter of Roald Dahl's James and the Giant Peach. All that and more in 1 hour. Now, the concluding episode of Emile Zola's dark psychological thriller, Thérèse Raquin. Set in Paris in the mid-19th century, Thérèse and her lover Laurent have killed her husband Camille. They're now free to marry, but will their actions ever allow them to live happily ever after?
Do you want me to come to your room tonight?
No, don't.
Thérèse, have you got the keys for the shop?
Coming, Aunt.
We need to lock up.
Let's wait. Let's be prudent.
It seems to me that I've already waited for long enough. I'm sick of waiting.
Laurent, dear, will you come and lock the windows?
Of course.
I'm finding it so difficult to get around these days.
Good night, Madame Raquin.
Good night, Laurent.
Thérèse.
Good night, Laurent. Sometimes it all seemed like a dream. 15 months since Camille died, and Laurent and I, well, we've been cautious ever since. I'm perfectly happy waiting. It's as though the passion's died. I'm not so sure about Laurent, though.
I still come to the shop late every evening to help them lock up, in spite of the strange feeling I get every time I enter the place. Did I really do it? I must have been mad to risk the guillotine like that. I don't have to marry her. Tonight, though, she looked beautiful. Out of her mourning clothes at last. She shouldn't have refused me. I know she wants me.
Well, it's dark tonight.
Hey, master.
What do you want?
Spare a few sous for a starving...
Get away from me! Creeping up on me like that in the dark, huh? What? Come out! Come on, I know there are more of you hiding down that alley, I know. Matches. Where the hell are they? If I'd stayed with her, I wouldn't be set upon by villains. Who's there? Come out, I say. Oh, what? What's that? Safe. Home safe. Ah. Just check under the... There's no one under the bed, you idiot. Oh. Therese. Oh, Therese.
I want you here beside me. Why did I send you away?
Dearest girl.
Won't you come to me again like you used to?
I have to get up at 8 o'clock in the morning and go to the office.
Come to me.
I could go to her. I could... Get up now.
Climb down the stairs, step out through the door.
Walk through the streets.
Along the boulevard.
Cross the square.
Cross the square.
Through the iron gate. Now I'm in the arcade. I'm opposite the jeweler's shop. I'm going through the back door. Down the passage. I climb up the steps.
The door at the top. I'm here waiting for you.
There you are. Standing against the light. Come to me.
Darling.
I'm here.
I'm here. I'm
kiss
here.
Me.
Kiss me.
Kiss me.
Kiss me. A dream. It was only a dream.
No. Where are you? Darling? Is that you? I've waited so long for you. So long.
I'm here for you now.
Kiss me, my darling.
I'm here.
Help me, Therese!
No.
Help
no.
me! I'm drowning!
No. Come here, no! No!
I'm drowning, Therese! No. Help me, please!
No.
Oh.
Oh. It's just a dream. It's just a dream. Oh. It's just a dream.
Oh, Therese.
I could go to her. Across the square. Through the iron gate. Now I'm in the arcade. I'm opposite the jeweler's shop. I'm going through the back door. Down the passage. I climb up the steps.
I'm here. I've been waiting.
Oh, just look at you.
I'm here. I'll always be here. Kiss me. Kiss me.
And so the night stretched on. Every time I tried to sleep, it was the same.
Over and over.
Until the morning. The cold light of morning.
Came at last.
What a fool I am. Camille under my bed indeed. Suddenly the blood is pumping hard in my neck, burning me. I put my hand up and feel the scar of the bite from Camille before he drowned. It's gnawing and boring into my flesh.
It's been going on every night for a week.
Yes. I see him there in the darkness.
Sometimes I dream that I'm in bed with you. But when I open my eyes...
It's him. We must be together.
Always.
Yes.
Then we must marry.
Yes. We must marry.
As soon as possible.
No.
What?
Not too soon.
Why?
We must still be careful not to arouse any suspicion. I've been thinking about it. This is what we'll do. You must pretend to be ill.
You're not looking well, my dear.
I'm all right. I've just got a headache.
Shall we get the doctor?
No, I'm just tired.
You're losing weight. And I often hear you crying in the night. Therese, you're all I've got left. I'm not so fit as I was. If anything should happen to you...
I made sure to seem particularly anxious about the health of Therese.
She's so pale.
I'm afraid we shall lose her. We cannot get away from the fact that she is very depressed.
I know.
The death of my friend was a terrible blow to her. She's been dying in herself since that awful day when he... when she lost him.
Yes.
And who can blame her? Camille was a wonderful man.
He was.
Every time I mentioned him, she melted a little more.
Every time he mentions my son, I feel as though I could love Laurent like my own child. He understands everything so well. I really didn't know what to do about Therese, so I thought I would ask the advice of my old friend Michaud. One Thursday night, before our game of dominoes, when the others had gone upstairs, I had a word with him in the shop.
I've noticed it too, for a while now. Shall I tell you what I think?
Tell me.
Your niece has been alone now for nearly 2 years.
Since?
Yes, the accident. And it's obvious that it's getting her down.
The loneliness?
Yes.
What's to be done about it?
As far as I can see, it's simple. She needs a husband.
What?
But of course. You can see it in her eyes.
Camille!
She's a young, full-blooded woman. You should marry her off as soon as you can, if you don't want to see her shrivel up entirely.
Oh.
That's my advice, my dear lady, and it's good, believe me.
Oh, she can't forget my son. She can't. But then later I thought perhaps he's right. Yes. But who? Who?
Who indeed?
I don't want some strange man coming to live here taking over. I couldn't stand it.
While Therese continued to play her role of the pale widow with that perfect hypocrisy she had acquired from an early age, I took the part of a sensible and serviceable man.
You'll want some more soup, I expect, Laurent?
No, no, I'll get it. You just stay where you are.
Thank you, dear.
Take this blanket, madame. Keep your leg warm.
Oh, you are so kind to me.
It gets drafty in this shop.
I must say, I do feel it right in my bones these days.
And so it was that one Thursday evening, when Michaud, Suzanne and Madame Racan were already in the dining room, I came in and sat down close to Therese. We exchanged a few words. I saw Michaud watching us, so I bent my head nearer to hers until we were almost touching. Then he turned to Madame Racan.
There is a husband to suit your niece.
Laurent?
He's devoted to you both. He'll be perfect.
Yes.
Have you been sleeping, Madame Therese?
Yes, I think he would.
He's strong and healthy. He'd be a great help to have around the place.
Michaud undertook to approach Laurent to test out the ground.
I love Therese, of course, devotedly, but as a sister, I couldn't hope for more, surely. Could I?
Whilst I spoke to Therese.
No, Aunt. I intend to remain faithful to the memory of Camille. I love Laurent, of course, but as a brother, you understand.
Little by little, however, Laurent allowed himself to be won over to accept the idea.
When Camille fell into the water, he shouted to me, "Save my wife, I entrust her to you." So I believe I would be acting in accordance with his last wish in marrying Therese.
And Therese too.
All right, Aunt. I will, if it makes you happy. That's all I live for now.
Then marry. Be content. I know that my son will bless you both from his grave.
Kiss now. Kiss one another. Then you'll be engaged. Don't be shy. There. You see what a fine couple they make? And it was my idea.
On Michaud's advice, the preparations for the marriage were hurried on, the formalities were taken care of, and the wedding was arranged for a day in early December.
That morning I woke with anticipation. It was very cold.
But I'll be warm in bed tonight. I wonder what she's thinking.
Lauren and I in this bed together. No more haunted nights ever again.
A week previously, Madame Racan had made over to Thérèse the 40,000 francs of her fortune.
And for you, Laurent, because I know how short you are of money. Here.
And she slipped me a purse containing 500 francs, with which I was able to buy my wedding outfit and a bottle of eau de cologne.
Thank you, Mother. I'll make a handsome bridegroom indeed.
You will, my boy. Oh, you will.
And I did want to look handsome. Draped over two chairs were my black trousers, my dress coat, my white waistcoat, shirt, and cambric tie. I dressed with care, but the shirt collar felt as if it was cutting into my neck. And when I raised my chin to look, I could see the scar, red and throbbing.
It was a small wedding party. Michaud was present, being one of the two witnesses. Suzanne, who helped me with my toilette, a couple of Laurent's colleagues from work, and my aunt, who was now so weak that she could barely walk. The ceremony at the town hall passed off well enough, though later the church was bitingly cold. In the evening, we repaired to a little restaurant on the height of Belleville for the wedding feast.
Everyone enjoying themselves? Let's break open the champagne. Oh.
And now, here we are sitting opposite each other over the meal, like strangers, with a heaviness in our hearts as we smile, eat, answer questions, move our limbs like machines. We are married, united as one, but it feels as if we've been violently torn apart and thrown further away from one another than ever before.
They are subdued, and that pleases me. It is appropriate. I feel as though Camille is here with us. Handing Thérèse over to Laurent.
Attention. Your attention, please, everyone. I wish to propose a toast. To the future offspring of the new Monsieur and Madame.
To the future offspring.
Come in. What time is it?
It's late. They've all gone home.
A clear fire burns on the hearth, throwing moving shadows onto the ceiling and a soft light onto the table. The bedroom is one mass of white and scented throughout, as if to serve as a nest for young, fresh love. My aunt has even added a few bits of lace to the bed and brought in vases of pale flowers which fill the room with an extra heavy perfume.
May I sit here?
If you like.
She's dressed in a pale nightgown, and she glows snowy white in the firelight. Her nightgown has fallen loose, and I can see part of her shoulder, half hidden by her black hair. I move towards her to kiss.
Don't.
What is it? Why are you so cold towards me? Don't you remember our afternoons in this room? In those days, I went through the arcade, up the back stairs, and came in by that door. But today, I came in openly by this one. We're free now. We can make love in peace. Oh, Thérèse, remember how I used to dream of staying the whole night, waking up in the morning next to you.
We've succeeded. We've got through all the obstacles. We belong to one another. We're married. That's what we wanted. The future is ours. Peace, happiness, love. Camille is...
Don't say that name.
But he is.
Don't let him in. I can smell him. Can you smell that cold, the drowned smell?
You must stop thinking about him.
You two having a little chat.
You see what you've done? You called him up.
Stop talking about him.
Not interrupting anything, am I?
He's here.
Shut him out. Think of normal, everyday things, anything. Let's chatter, just chatter, and he'll go away. He's not real.
No.
These new boots are killing me.
Oh.
I'll put on my slippers.
Yeah.
Well, it was a most enjoyable day, I thought, and everything went off perfectly. And didn't they give us a superb meal at the restaurant? Mm. The weather held up too, although it was chilly.
Yeah, the church was very cold.
It's good and warm in here now, though. We'll be snug and cozy tonight, my love. I think the guests enjoyed themselves. Mm-hmm. Certainly old Michaud did. He drank a lot too.
Yeah.
Never seen him in a state like that before.
Oh, my feet were like ice.
What?
In the church. I tried to warm them on that little stove.
Didn't notice?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't notice the cold so much as the shadows. It was dark in there, in the corners.
There was no sun getting in to give light.
Therese, shall we forget about the church?
At first I thought we were the only people in there. And then I heard the chanting. Coming from that little chapel on the other side of the nave. Did you hear it, the chanting?
I think there were some people carrying candles.
It was a funeral. When my eyes got used to the half-light, I could see into the chapel. The coffin was covered by a black cloth with a big white cross on it. Such a little coffin it was. As if a young person had died. Poor-looking, miserable somehow. I don't suppose any funerals are happy, but that one, I wondered what he looked like.
How do you know it was a he?
Laurent, did you see him when you went to the morgue?
Yes.
Did he seem to have suffered much?
I suffered.
I don't think so.
What's the matter? Are you in pain?
It's my neck.
What's this here? This wound. How did you get it?
The bite Camille gave me in the boat just before he went in. It's nothing, it's nothing. Kiss me, Therese, kiss me.
No, not there, not there.
Please,
no.
You must.
No!
It's no use, is it? It's no use.
For nearly an hour, we sit in silence. Little by little, the heat of the room has become stifling.
And the flowers are fading, making the air sickly.
He's there.
Where?
I can see him.
Where?
His face looks like it did on a slab at the morgue. Can't you see it?
That? Oh, it's only his portrait.
His portrait?
Is that really what I look like?
The painting you did of him. My aunt was supposed to have it removed to her room today. She must have forgotten.
Go and take it down.
No. No, you do it.
No, please, I beg of you.
No!
Let's turn it to face the wall, then it won't frighten us.
I can't.
Please.
No.
Please.
No. No, don't push me now! No!
What's that noise?
What?
Listen.
behind that door. It's coming up.
Oh, it's him. Hey, he's trying to get him.
Stop it. Shut up. Shh.
No, don't. No, don't. No, don't. No. It's a cat. It's Francois.
It was coming for me.
It must have got locked in the passage when my aunt prepared the room.
It knows everything. Look at its eyes.
What are you doing to him? Don't you hurt him. No.
I'm putting him out.
I sit down on the chair once more and wait.
And I pace up and down between the bed and the window until, at last, a dirty white dawn breaks, cold and grey.
I feel calmer now.
I take down the portrait of Camille and I see it for what it is. How could I ever have thought it was him? What an idiot I was.
What are you doing?
I'm putting the bed up so Aunt will think we slept in it.
I'm so tired. Therese, I didn't get married just to sit up all night. This has got to stop. I intend to have a good night's sleep tonight, so there'd better be an end to this kind of childishness. And try to be pleasant and not scare the life out of me again.
I'll try.
But the next night was the same, if not worse. And the following night, and so it continued. I felt brave during the daytime, and I catnapped at work to keep up my strength. But at night, I was as bad as her.
I'm so tired. Laurent, if we keep our clothes on, we don't have to touch each other.
All right, let's try it.
After this, I would slip between the sheets and lie close to the wall.
And I would stretch out on the opposite side at the very edge of the mattress.
And that was how we managed to get some rest. Until one night.
Kiss me.
No. He'll know.
He's as dead as a doornail. Kiss me.
He's between us.
He's not. He can't be. Look, when we're dead, we won't be any happier or unhappier in our graves just because we caused the death of some idiot. So let's try and enjoy love now while we can. Kiss me.
You know.
Your lips are as cold as ice, as if you'd been kissing a corpse.
No, I have.
What? You're married to a drowned man, are you? Don't be so stupid. One night I'll take you to the cemetery and dig up his coffin and you'll see just how dead he really is. You are my wife now. I'll show you. Huh? Come on. Try.
I'm trying.
Try harder. Ah! Don't kiss my neck. Oh, that hurt. Ah! You shouldn't have done that. Nothing's of any use. It's finished.
What should we do?
Every evening, Thérèse and Laurent are so attentive. They seem to want me all to themselves. And they love to hear my stories about the old days in Vernon.
And my husband, Alphonse, his name was. Well, he was a lovely man. Pity he died so young.
It doesn't matter what she says.
We don't hear it anyway.
We sit at the table after dinner, me in the middle, with one of them on either side.
Because as long as she's there,
separating us,
like a barrier,
we are safe.
Safe from one another.
And I'd sometimes think they would sit there all night.
As we would.
If she didn't get tired.
Interest. Goodness, look at the time. I don't know about you, but I'm going to have to go to my bed.
Let me help you.
But every morning they seem to get up earlier and earlier. By the time I get to the dining room, Laurent is finishing his coffee and swallowing the last of his toast.
Good morning.
Oh, Mother, good morning.
Good morning.
What? Not off to work already.
Must go, I'm afraid. See you both this evening.
Oh, You don't need to clear up yet, Therese. You're always on the go.
Best if it's not left. What would you like for breakfast, Aunt?
You shouldn't have got rid of the cleaner, you know. She was a help to you.
No, she was no good. Vera was filthy. See those windows?
The sun shows up every blemish. It's such a lovely morning. I'd say that spring is on its way at last, wouldn't you?
I take a detour to work these mornings and walk by the Seine. The trees along the quay are bursting into leaf, and the sun is warm on my face. It's funny how spring catches up on you, brings you back to life. This is what I need. Sunshine. Fresh air. I don't want to be cooped up in that office any longer. I deserve more than that.
Oh, I do love these Thursday evening get-togethers at us. I really do.
More tea, Monsieur, Suzanne?
We won't, thank you.
Shall we get down to the dominoes then, Laurent?
Before we start the game, by your leave, madame, I've got something to tell you all.
Hmm? What is it?
Some news. I've resigned from my job. Oh. I'll be leaving the office in 2 weeks.
But have you got another job to go to?
You didn't tell me about this.
What are you going to do instead?
Something I've wanted to do for a long time.
He's never been happy in that job, I know.
Tell us.
Yes, come on.
I intend to become an artist.
Oh. Oh. What a good idea.
Where are you going to get the money to set yourself up?
Isn't that what you did before? Painting.
And very good he was at it too.
I'm going to rent a small studio and start again.
You'll be living entirely at my expense.
You've got plenty, 40,000 francs. You can afford it.
It's all tied up. She made sure of that before she gave it to me, one of the few sensible things she's done. Have you shot the bolt on that door?
Yes.
You can't get at that money without my signature on a document, and that I'll never give.
I'm not going to spend the rest of my days slaving away at that job and my nights in misery with you. I want some pleasure before I die.
Why don't you leave me then? That would suit us perfectly.
My dear, I would have abandoned you 3 days after our marriage with no qualms if it hadn't been...
For the money?
Yes, the money. The only reward for my crime, as it turns out.
So you'd rather keep on living with me, even though you hate me?
Even that, than be forced to stay on in that vile office.
Painting. You were never any good at it. You never will be. Which is a clever excuse to be idle at my expense. Why are you looking at me like that?
If you do not consent to finance me...
Don't you threaten me, don't you?
No, Therese!
Just coming.
Have you finished locking up?
Yes.
Coming, Aunt! Are you ready to go to bed now?
Not quite. I've been thinking, children. Now, it seems to me that the desire of my dear son... Because you are my dear son now, Laurent... should be met. And we must give him the means to become a man of talent... Isn't that so, Therese?
Well,
so, we will pay for you to rent a studio.
Oh, a modest one is all I need.
And you will receive further from us. 100 francs a month pocket money, is that agreed?
That's very generous of you, Mother. Isn't it, Therese?
Yes.
Therese and I can pay you that and still manage from the profits of the shop.
Thank you.
Anything to make you happy, dear Laurent. Anything.
Thank you so much.
That's settled then. Help me get to my room now. Oh, come on, Francois. Off my lap. Laurent.
I'll take him.
Why did he go for you like that? Francois wouldn't hurt a fly.
The following day, I took a small studio I had had my eye on for some time. It was an attic of about 7 or 8 yards square. I bought a couple of cheap chairs, a table, an old kitchen dresser, and a divan couch. I set up my canvas and easel and began work, painting. I had a routine whereby I worked for 3 hours every morning and spent my afternoons strolling around Paris.
Laurent, old man. It is Laurent, isn't it?
Pierre!
I hardly recognized you.
It was Pierre. My old college friend, the painter I had shared an apartment with in my student days.
You've lost so much weight.
Oh, I'm a married man now.
I thought you put on weight when you got married. But you're looking very smart. Quite the gentleman. And dressed like an ambassador. What are you doing with yourself these days?
Oh, well, I'll show you if you can spare half an hour or so.
Indeed.
I thought I'd start with painting heads. I've done just 5 so far.
Heads of people you know?
Oh, no, I make them up from my imagination.
But this is amazing.
I intend to use them in a large picture I'm preparing.
You really did paint them? You?
Of course. Why shouldn't I?
They're good. Very good indeed.
I'm glad you like them.
Have you been through some suffering in your life since I knew you last? Something that would have sharpened your sensitivity? Oh, but I shouldn't pry into your affairs. That one's lovely. I like this one too, but... Strange.
What?
It occurs to me. There's just one thing.
Yes?
All these studies have a... What shall I say? A family likeness. All 5 heads resemble each other. And the women have something violent about them that gives them the appearance of men. If you intend to make a picture out of these studies, you'll have to change some of the faces. Unless your characters are all brothers or brothers and sisters.
That afternoon, after Pierre left, I sketched out a new face.
Quite a good likeness.
No.
Of me.
I tried again.
That's the face of a person of distinction, that is.
No.
I tried sketching different heads. Heads of angels.
I like that one.
Virgins.
My, you are clever.
Roman warriors with their helmets.
Oh, very warlike.
Rosy children, bandits. Let's try caricature, exaggerated features, grotesque heads. Animals, then dogs, cats.
Camille, Camille, they are all Camille. Suzanne, what are you doing here? Where's Therese and Madame?
Madame's been taken ill, and she's very bad, and the doctor's been, and they've taken her to the hospital. And Therese sent for me to look after the shop.
You've been hours.
It was awful.
How is she?
We were just having tea in the shop, and she was talking away about Vernon, you know, the way she does, and then she stopped. She started sort of choking. And she couldn't move, and... Well, I was terrified. I thought she was dead.
Is it a stroke?
Yes. She's paralysed. She can't move her limbs.
Paralysed?
She's lost the power of speech. The doctor says there's no hope of her ever recovering. She can see and she can hear, and that's all.
It was as though we were alone together, Lauren and I. And she was just... a parcel, a thing, in the dining room. Except for her eyes. Her eyes would move and sparkle, and we would put her in the chair under the lamp so that her face was lit up. And we would keep her there, between us for as long as possible. We could look at her, and it helped keep Camille away.
They are so good to her father. Laurent lifts her up out of bed in the morning before he goes to his studio, and he carries her so gently. He really loves her, you know. Therese dresses and feeds her and looks after her all day and seems to know exactly what she wants just from reading her eyes. But it must be awful, not being able to speak. And who knows what she may be thinking all alone inside her head. She must be terribly unhappy.
But I am happy. Happy in the care and affection of my dear, dear children. I wish I could tell them both, but surely they can see from my eyes just how contented I am. I could never have hoped to spend the last days of my life surrounded by such care and love. I've had my share of pain and suffering, and now, at last, I'm safe.
For several weeks, we somehow managed to get through our evenings together. But soon, it became clear that she was no longer alive enough to separate us and protect us from each other.
I did not crawl out of my sleep last night.
You did. You woke me up. You shouted. I didn't mean to do it.
Shh, she can hear you. Talk about something else if you must talk.
There isn't anything else. There's nothing else except that nightmare.
Oh, you can't leave it alone, can you? You've got to keep raking it up over and over, time after time.
It's you. You keep coming back to it because you did it.
You were the one who first suggested it.
I couldn't have done it. I couldn't have brought myself to do what you did, lure him into that boat and then in the darkness pick him up and throw him into the river in cold blood.
I did it so that we could be together, so that we could be free to love each other in peace.
Peace? What peace? What freedom? I've had neither since you drowned Camille. Yes, since you killed him. Is he?
You called him. You said his name.
There'll be nowhere safe for us now in this house. Look. She's trying to speak. She's trying to move. Aunt?
What can we do? What can we say?
I don't know.
Children have killed my child. Oh, God in heaven, have I heard right? My children have killed my child. Oh, help me.
Neither of us would have told her deliberately. We wouldn't have been so cruel, but now she knew.
And soon it was Thursday.
Do you think it's wise to let her come into the dining room with us all this evening?
Why?
Well, she knows.
She can't speak. She can't move.
But there's something in her eyes, a resolve, a determination.
It would be cruel to lock her away and deprive her of the company of her friends.
Well, I mean, I only meant that perhaps we could just leave her in her room, say she was ill or sleeping.
Yes, and then that idiot Michaud would go straight to her to see how his dear old friend was, and suspicions would be aroused. She can't do us any harm, Therese. Better to leave things as they are. Anyway, those two are very stupid. They'll never notice any change in your aunt.
But I had been waiting for this evening. I had been afraid that they would not let me join the party. And now I called up all my last reserves of energy. I will avenge you, my son. Tonight.
That was my game, I think.
Well done, well played.
Father, look.
What is it, Suzanne?
Look at Madame. Mm-hmm. Her right hand.
Yes.
It's on the table.
Yes.
But it wasn't on the table before.
Oh, I'm sure it was.
It was in her lap. It's always in her lap, covered with a blanket.
To keep it warm, I'll just put it back.
No, wait. She's moving her fingers.
Oh, she can't move her fingers.
She is. She must want something.
She wants to play dominoes, don't you, Mother? She's missing the game.
No, she's shaking her finger.
She used to love her dominoes.
She's tracing something on the oilcloth.
Letters. She's trying to tell us something. Tea.
Perhaps she wants some more tea. No, I don't think it was a letter.
It was. Then that was an H. And there's an E.
T, H, and an E. R.
Another E. And S, is it?
And E. Therese. She spelled out your name, Therese.
Oh, please.
A. N.
D. Spells and, Therese. And
L.
A.
You. Laurent. Therese and Laurent is going to be. Oh, look, her eyes say yes. Please, go on, madame. We all want to know what you've got to tell us.
Oh, I think she's getting tired.
No. She started again. A. R.
T.
Thérèse and Laurent are... Madame, can you continue? What were you going to say about your dear children?
Oh, she's crying. Oh, poor Madame. It must have been such an effort for her. She really wants us to know.
I'm sure we do know. I think she wants to say Thérèse and Laurent are taking very good care of me. Don't you, Madame? There, my dear. It does you great credit that you tried so hard to express your appreciation of what they do for you.
It's all right, Aunt. Let's just put your hand back under the blanket again, shall we? Don't want you to catch cold. Shh, now. And here. Here's Francois to come see you. Francois to cheer you up. I'll put him on your lap, shall I?
I'm sorry, Camille, my dear son. I am so sorry. I tried, but my body is of no use anymore.
Laurent and I had loved each other with great passion.
Now we were to hate with equal force. The evil was incurable. We could not openly admit that our marriage was the final punishment for the murder, and so we fought each other on the slightest pretext.
What did you say?
This water is warm.
I couldn't get any ice.
I can't drink it.
There's nothing wrong with it.
It's warm and it tastes muddy, like water from a river.
River water. River.
Oh, why are you crying now?
You know, because the Seine, you were the one.
Liar.
You threw him into the Seine.
You wanted me to do it.
No, I...
You, yes, you. Don't act the innocent with me.
I didn't drown him.
Yes, you did. We were on the bank, and I said I'd pitch him in, and you agreed to it, so we both murdered him.
Not true. I never wanted to kill him.
Didn't you come up to my room that evening? Didn't you make love to me?
No, you...
Didn't you persuade me to get rid of him?
You killed him!
You drove me mad with your lovemaking. You used me to kill him for you.
That's not true. It's not true. That's a terrible thing to say. I was always a good woman before I met you, and if I drove you mad, you drove me even mad.
Don't be a coward. Take your fair share of the blame. We did it together.
Aunt... Oh. Why must we hurt you like this? I know we should shut you in your bedroom to spay, but I'm afraid.
Things now took a different turn. Contrary to the way she'd behaved before, Thérèse began outwardly mourning for Camille, in the hope that the dead man, who had remained unmoved in the face of her anger, might yield to her tears, return to his grave, and leave her in peace.
Dearest aunt, I am a wicked woman, and I don't deserve mercy. I lied to you. I drove your son to his death. I should have loved him more and taken better care of him. You mustn't pity me. You must not. But if you could spare me a kind thought just in your head, I know you can hear me.
In my head, I tell you that if I lived for the rest of eternity, I would never forgive you. And if I ever had the chance of revenge, I would show you no pity.
But your eyes are full of pity. I can't believe it, that you can be so good and generous. Oh, Aunt, I must kiss you. Say that you forgive me. I know it. You forgive me.
Suzanne came over every day now to help out in the shop.
Madame Thérèse not here again?
She has a lot to do.
How is the old lady?
Same as ever.
You ask me, Madame Thérèse is not well herself. Just want a packet of pins, please. She'll disappear altogether if she gets any thinner. And she's so jumpy.
I'm sorry, I'm afraid we're out of pins at the moment, but they're on order.
Oh, you've never got anything much here these days. And there's another haberdasher's opened a couple of streets away. She'll be losing all her customers soon if she doesn't look out.
Oh, afternoon, monsieur.
Afternoon. Where's Thérèse, Suzanne? Hasn't gone out, has she?
Upstairs.
He's not looking so good neither.
And I am a wretched thing. Mea culpa, mea maxima culpa.
What are you doing?
What? Oh, talking to Aunt.
On your knees?
I'm repenting of my guilt, of course. We are both guilty, you and I. We must repent if we ever want any peace.
Rubbish.
Haven't I been quieter recently? She forgives me. Look. See? When I kiss her, her eyes are full of forgiveness.
Forgiveness? Can you see that the very sight of you is hateful to her, and if she could, she would slap your face?
You refuse to feel any remorse, but I am more guilty than you because I should have saved my dear husband. He was a good man.
Good? If you mean he was a fool, then yes, he was good.
He was.
Have you forgotten that you couldn't bear the sight of him?
Don't insult his memory. You know nothing about the feelings of women. Camille loved me and I loved him.
Oh, no doubt it was because you loved your husband so much that you took me for your lover.
I loved him as if I was his sister. He was the son of my dear benefactress. He had delicate feelings. He showed himself to be noble and generous.
Oh, dear.
And he was better than you. I wish he was here with me now.
Shut up. Shut.
And you lying dead in your coffin. No! Yes. Thank God! Beat me! Kill me! Camille never raised his hand to me in his life! Oh, no, you upset Aunt.
She's not upset. Look at her eyes. They're burning. She wants me to beat you or kill you.
No!
And that cat. What's it staring at me like that for, huh? No, it's staring.
Leave him alone.
Staring. Huh? It knows, doesn't it? It understands everything. And if it would find a human voice, it would tell all.
No.
Just like she would. Perhaps she can make it speak, or she could speak through it. We can't have that, can we?
Laurent, don't! Leave him!
It's drawn blood. Look.
Oh, no.
Well, not anymore, it won't. Never again.
We have to get away from each
other.
Thoughts
of separation now occur to us constantly.
What could we do with my aunt?
What would we say to our friends?
If I left,
they might suspect something.
But we can't go on much longer like this.
Something has got to happen.
We were to go through just one more phase before we found the final solution.
Where are you going?
To get the bread.
You're always getting the bread.
I go twice a day like I always have.
Sometimes you're away for longer than other times.
Sometimes there's a queue at the boulangerie.
You pass the church on your way, don't you?
Yes.
You ever think of slipping in for a quick prayer?
What if I do?
Well, from there, it's not too far to thinking about going to confession. Is it? Is it? And you're good at confessing, aren't you?
Don't. Oh, you're hurting me.
At least to dumb old ladies.
Ugh.
Don't even think about it. Ever. Remember, we will both be tried and sentenced to death.
I don't care. You make my life unbearable. I prefer to have it over with. Yes. Yes. I am ready to follow you to your execution.
Where are you going?
To the police. I'm not the coward, you are.
Come on then. We'll go to the police together.
But we get as far as the shop door and...
prison. Court. Trial.
Execution.
We turn and go back upstairs.
More than 20 times we got as far as the door of the police station, one following the other, before we gave in and went home.
Now it was I, though, who wanted to confess.
And then it was me. We spied on each other from morn till night.
I no longer went to my studio. If Thérèse went down to the shop, I followed, afraid that she might talk to a customer.
If Laurent stood in the doorway, watching people passing, I stood beside him to see that he didn't speak to anyone.
We never took our eyes off each other until...
until... we can't go on like this.
We can't.
We've got to do...
got to get away from each other.
From each other.
One of us must...
disappear.
Disappear so that the other...
can have peace.
The separation must be forever.
The separation must be forever. He must go.
She must go. One evening, seeing Thérèse drinking her nightly glass of sugar water, I knew what I would do. Poison. The next day, I managed to get out of the house alone.
while he was out. I took the big knife from the kitchen drawer and hid it in a corner of the sideboard.
Shall I put the dominoes away for you, Therese, my dear?
I'll do it.
He'll do anything for you, that husband of yours, won't he? That's why it's so lovely being in this house. Mm. You're so fond of each other, you two. It rubs off. It does. Look.
I never get tired on our Thursday nights. Usually at home I'm in bed by 9 o'clock, but I feel as if I could stay up all night when we're here.
Yes. This room is truly the temple of peace. Well, we must take our leave of you once more, dearest madame. Reluctantly, of course.
I'll come tomorrow morning at 9 then, Therese.
Don't come till the afternoon. I'll probably go out in the morning.
Going out? Anywhere interesting? Can I come?
Oh, you won't let her out of his sight, will he?
Afternoon it shall be.
Come on then, Suzanne, and let these good people go to bed.
Good night.
After the guests have gone, we return to the dining room where we sit for a moment in silence. My aunt watches us, as if she knows that something is different in the air tonight.
Well, aren't we going to bed?
Yes. Yes, of course we're going to bed. I'll just mix the sugar water.
No, leave it. I'll do that. You go and get your aunt ready. Go on now.
I half turn away as I empty a small phial into the glass of sugar water.
Well, I take the knife from the sideboard and slip it into the pocket of my dress. Then he turns.
She turns.
And I see the phial.
In my hand.
No!
And I see the glint of the knife blade.
In the folds of my skirt.
Therese.
I understand.
This is the only way, my love.
The only way to lasting peace.
For the two of us.
Together.
Kiss me. Goodbye, my love.
Goodbye. Then I take the glass from his hand, drink half, and I hand it back to him.
I take it from her, and I drain.
You are avenged, my son. You are avenged at last.
In Thérèse Raquin by Émile Zola, you heard Charlotte Riley as Thérèse, Andrew Buchan as Laurent, and Toby Haydock as Camille. Pauline Jefferson was Madame Raquin, Rob Picavance was Michaud, Deborah McAndrew played Suzanne, and Drew Carter Kane played both Pierre and the Beggar. It was dramatised by Diana Griffiths and produced by Pauline Harris. Tomorrow we have the comic masterpiece by P.G. Wodehouse, Something Fresh, directed and starring Martin Jarvis. Now, next week on 4Extra, there's an adaptation of the groundbreaking novel by Wilkie Collins, written in 1859 and considered to be among the first mystery novels. The Woman in White is the story of a young teacher, Walter Hartwright, dispatched to Cumberland to school the two sisters of Limeridge House. But an encounter with a troubled woman alters his relationship with the family.
I had an uneasy sense that in helping her I might have done wrong. At the same time, however, I didn't know how I could have done right.
Have you seen a woman pass this way? A young woman in a white gown. She's escaped from my asylum.
The mysterious meeting immerses Hartwright in a search for truth, love and sanity. Starring Toby Stevens, The Woman in White begins next Monday morning at 10.
Two unforgettable names of comedy.
Do forgive me, Vicar. This is Mr. Morcombe.
Oh, your vicarship.
I don't recall seeing you in church on Sundays, Mr. Morcombe.
No. Well, I go on a Saturday. It's less crowded.
Ladies and gentlemen, Eric Morcombe and Ernie Wise.
You know, I feel really keen after my holiday.
Well, where did you go?
Loch Ness.
How is the wife?
The Eric Morcombe and Ernie Wise Show on BBC Radio 4 Extra starts next Tuesday lunchtime at 12:30 and again in the evening at 8:30.
Oh, lovely. Oh, there's no need to do any more. We can finish on that.
The great gardener Gertrude Jekyll once said, "A garden is a grand teacher. It teaches patience, it teaches industry and thrift."
In a day and age where everything is so easily available, I love Christmas pudding. Could not eat it every day. It's wonderful because it's only around for a week or two, and that's the wonderful thing about gardening.
Above all, it teaches entire trust.
Personally speaking, what gardening has taught me is that I never want to work in an office again.
Bravo.
Penelope Keith presents 3 hours of horticultural highlights from the BBC Sound Archives. 4 Extra goes gardening this Saturday morning at 9 o'clock and again in the evening at 7.
The lovely Mel is here now to keep you glued to 4 Extra for the next hour. Plenty coming up. It's Wes Butters back with you from 5 with an hour of comedy.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Hello, it's Wednesday's 4 o'clock show with me, Mel Gedroych. I hope you've got your waterproof jacket and your umbrella with you today because we've got a very weathery show. In our story, James and the Giant Peach were about to meet the Cloud Men. Was the centipede right when he said this to the earthworm?
"Do you think they'd eat us?"
asked the earthworm. The centipede grinned.
"They'd eat you. They'd cut you up like a salami and eat you in thin slices."
The poor earthworm began to quiver all over with fright.
Will the Cloud Men slice up the earthworm and actually eat him? Stay tuned to find out. The wonderful Miriam Margolyes reads Roald Dahl's classic tale, and it's on towards the end of the show. We're also going to hear from the Cloud Appreciation Society.
It's far better, and you'll be far more likely to find happiness if you find what's beautiful in the everyday stuff around you. And clouds are everyday phenomena. They're around us the whole time. They're the ever-present backdrops to our lives.
All this and so much more on today's 4 o'clock show. But before we do anything else, we've got my Magical Mystery Tour to start. Every day on the 4 o'clock show, we go together on a Magical Mystery Tour. I drop clues throughout the show and you suss out where we're going. Ideally, obviously, before we get there towards the end of the show. Otherwise, we might not know where we're going. But I'll know where we're going, so yeah, that's okay. Today we're going to a country with the wolf as its national animal. The wolf had a very important role in the founding of this country's capital city. Where are we going? It's January, it's the UK. I think the chances are it's raining where you are. It's said that the Inuits have 50 words for snow. Well, inspired by this idea, BBC Radio 4's broadcasting house wondered if British people had 50 words for rain, or at least more words than are normally used in the usual Met Office weather forecast. Broadcasting house asked their listeners for their descriptions of rain, and the words came luttering and plothering in. Armed with a bumper chute, which means umbrella, and the best word suggested, Kevin went off to the Met Office training centre to persuade the weather forecasters of the future to be a little bit more, I don't know, creative.
Outside the Met Office training centre, which is outside Exeter, it certainly appears to be a blustery, showery sort of day. Flags snapping at the flagpoles, scudding clouds the colour of cigarette ash, and so on. But here, you can't help thinking it might all be part of some computer-generated exercise for the trainees. The wind feels real enough, though, as we're taken on a tour of the measuring devices. They're bristling with lasers, of course, and the latest in telemetry. but they look like a couple of giant trouser presses, a flower pot, a dustbin, and a length of hose pipe. As our guides, Dave Britton and Mark Speck, explain how it all works, it begins, inevitably, to rain.
That little bit of astroturf behind you, with a sensor pointing at it, measures snow depth.
I'm getting mixed scientific signals now, because there are two weathermen here. He's just put the hood up on his coat. You're not wearing a coat. This is pouring down with rain, isn't it? This is pouring down with rain.
Heading towards moderate.
Right. So you're not soaking then?
No, I'm not. Yet.
Mark, he's the one with the raincoat, is interested to hear suggestions from BH listeners for ways to expand the dull old Met Office lexicon of